Welcome back, episode 4 of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. We're coming to you Sunday. We're giving you a couple episodes in a row here. As always, it's your guys, Reeks from Barstool, Ben Brust. Ben, what's going on, man?
Hey, man. It's been better before.
It's a Sunday. Sundays are for naps. Sundays are for feeling terrible.
Yeah. Next Sunday will be good, though, with the Masters on. That's
prime time napping, unless you have a bet in and your guy's in contention.
That's true. I won't be after yesterday.
Yeah, my guys will be for sure in like miscut, and then I'll like today I had Ricky Fowler at 14-1 to win the Shell, and he started 3 over through the first 2 holes. Like, oh, least, wonderful.
Yeah, you won't be focused on that.
No. So yeah, next Sunday we will hear the Masters theme music, and it'll feel weird, though, because it's the end of basketball, man. Like, I love Masters, but it's always weird when basketball ends.
It's the Jim Nance tour. It's like the farewell, and then he goes to Augusta. And I did both last year, which was awesome. I did the Final Four in Houston, and then I did Augusta. And Jim Nance was he actually got us into Butler's cabin, which was ridiculous.
How big is it inside of there?
It's tiny.
Is it?
It's actually like, it's almost like just like a small like room.
Like a studio apartment almost?
Pretty much. That's probably a good comparison of it. Trico is in there too. Obviously he won't be in there this year because he's done with ESPN, but it was super cool. Like, cause there's no phones available.
Yeah.
You can't bring them in the ground. But when we were in there, Jim goes, "Hey, Ben, you should get a picture." And I was like, "All right, yeah, like, sure, it's your idea, fine."
Right. If Jim Nance says it, you should be allowed to do whatever.
Yeah, and then he texted me that, so humble brag.
Yeah. Your boy's been in Butler Cabin and played in the Final Four. No big deal.
It was a good year last year, but I wanted to go to Phoenix, but part of me would have been, like, kind of mad still, like, that Wisconsin wasn't playing.
Yeah, I mean, it was two great games. Two great games.
Yeah, unbelievable games.
But it would be weird. I always thought about that because I've never gone to a Final Four game in person. And I always wondered, do I want to go?
You only want to go if Kentucky's in.
That was my debate. Do I want to go if Kentucky's in, or do I just want to go with no rooting interest? Just to truly enjoy the Final Four.
Here's the thing. You can do that if your team's irrelevant. If your team's, like, relevant throughout the year, then you're not going to want to do that.
Right. Like, if I would have went in, say, 2013 when Kentucky missed a tournament and...
Yeah, and, like you went down with some buddies. I mean, it's a fun event. It's a very... I was listening to someone talk about it the other day compared to the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is very, like, you got to know somebody. You got to be on a list. The Final Four is just a really happy-go-lucky, like, everyone's having fun. And a buddy of mine... Who I live with works for Intersport, and they run the 3-point and dunk contest. So I want to make it down either next year or wait till Minneapolis in 2019. Because I know next year's in San Antonio. I've never been there. That doesn't seem like a place that I want to go for the Final Four.
I don't know. I've heard good things about San Antonio.
Yeah, I guess I haven't heard much about San Antonio. Yeah. So
I was actually in Indianapolis for the Giants-Patriots Super Bowl. I didn't go to the game, but I just went to Indianapolis. I have a buddy who lived there and was like, "Hey, you want to come on out?" We just hung out at the bars, like, by the stadium, watched the games there. I mean, Indianapolis was a cool city to host it because it's smaller. They had it set up perfectly.
It should be in Indy almost every year.
I mean, Indy's the perfect city to host Super Bowl, NCAA, you know, Final Four, all that good stuff. It's set up well.
It's a perfect town. It's got... Everything's close enough. You got good bars.
Yep.
It's pretty lively. It's big, but it's
and
not
too big.
And the
bars are close to the stadium, which is nice.
Exactly.
All right.
I wish they would do that more in Indy.
So let's get into this. Hopefully, we know there's still a little bit of tech issues. We're working on that. Shout out to our guy, Tommy, who edits this stuff for us. He's been messing around trying to get us to sound better. So we're hoping... With each passing episode, it gets a little bit better.
Also, shout out to Ozzy for the social help.
Ozzy for all the social help, for sure. Those graphics that you see, which you should be if you're following Fundamentally SD on Twitter. Ozzy puts that together, and those are awesome. He tweets out GIFs. Does an awesome job with all that stuff. Shout out to everyone listening. Again, as I mentioned last episode, we got up to number 39 on the sports charts in iTunes. We want to get better than that. We can't get better without your guys' help with listening, subscribing on iTunes, leaving rates and reviews. So please, please continue to do that. Like I said, it really helps us on the back end. It helps us get guests and sponsors because we can go to them and say, hey, look at this audience that we have, which just provides better quality and better shows for you guys. It looks like we will have our first guest this coming week. So looking forward to that. He's a pretty big name if you follow college basketball. So looking forward to that. But let's get right into it. This episode, clearly everyone knows what we're doing. We're going to recap the Final Four. We're going to look at the title game. I think that was one of the most entertaining Final Four Saturdays in a long time.
I wouldn't disagree.
Like, the games were both competitive.
What do you mean by a long time? I mean, been some pretty good Final Fours.
It just seems like lately it's been one really good Final Four game.
True.
And one blowout.
True. And I mean, as I was kind of telling you before the show, Gonzaga, even though South Carolina made that run, they weren't losing that game. There was no way they were losing that game.
Yeah, man. I mean, unfortunately, it sucked. Like, in the picks, I gave out Gonzaga -6, and I was so confident in it. They were covering for like 28 minutes, 30 minutes of the game. They're in control of that whole game. Nigel Williams-Goss was unbelievable.
And from our preview, everything we talked about happened. South Carolina was not able to keep up with Gonzaga making shots at the end of the day. They fought, they battled, they clawed, but at the end of the day, Gonzaga's offensive willpower and the way they were shooting the ball was just the difference.
Yeah, and Zach Collins looked like the potential lottery pick that everyone who's watched Gonzaga all year thought, right? Like, that was the breakout of all breakout games in the Final Four. I mean, you slap up like a 14-13-6 stat line.
That happens not every year, but
there is always one guy that kind of has that the good game, but rarely do I feel like it's the guy that's the potential lottery pick. It's a guy like Luke Hancock that won MOP with Louisville. It's a guy like that.
Do we even throw in like the Spike Albrecht performance?
Right, right. It's the guys like, you know, that you don't expect. Well, Zach Collins, like I said, we said he's a potential lottery pick. It's just rare to see a guy like that kind of bust out and become a national story, just because you usually hear about him and no one really talked about Zach Collins.
Yeah. All in all, I thought it was a good game. Obviously, the other game was unreal and in a crazy ending. But Gonzaga showed exactly who they've been all year, and arguably the two best, most complete put together teams are playing for this title.
Yeah, and that's what I think is cool is, as we mentioned in the last episode, where I said the NCAA tournament is so awesome and so dumb at the same time because you rarely get to see, you know, the two best teams, the two most complete teams, however you want to label it.
I'm gonna kind of disagree with that. I mean, to some aspect, yes, like it's good but bad for that. But the teams that make it to the final are playing well at the right time, and they're usually pretty complete teams.
Sure, but it's just, you know, you feel a little let down, like in 11 when it was Butler, VCU, Kentucky, UConn, Final Four. Like, you just kind of felt underwhelmed. Like, these are not the four best teams. Or, you know, you didn't even have four of what felt like the 10 best teams there.
Did you also see who tweeted that the one-and-dones versus experience? It was a chart of all the teams since like 07.
Oh, our friend of the program, Sam Vecini.
Oh, Vecini, that's right. And it showed all the one-and-dones, and I think two teams in like 10 years have had championship one-and-done. Championship teams have had one-and-dones.
That's two more than the Big Ten.
That's not the point, though.
to me, it's just one of those things where you just take a stat, and then you extend it, and it becomes a storyline. So it's like, does the Big Ten have a problem with, or the Pac-12 have a problem with how they play that they can't win the title?
I don't know, because there's got to be a rhyme or reason to it.
I think it's just...
Maybe.
I don't think there is a rhyme or reason. I just think the NCAA tournament's really fucking hard to win. Like, I don't think there's a rhyme or reason. Like, you can't sit there and graph out, okay, you have to have XYZ to win this thing.
No, again,
I'm sure you can look at KenPom and say you need to have at least
No, again, you got to have some components that add up to a championship
Right, but
team.
there's nothing specific. Like you can sit there and say, but there's nothing. If you look at data, there's probably not one recipe where you have to have X adjusted D, X adjusted O, X seniors, X sophomores, X juniors, X freshmen, and this is how you win it. Like there, I bet there's nothing across the board that matches.
Ben Palm is going to put this together, aka someone's going to do a study, and I'm going to find some data and share it with you because I really think there's got to be some sort of formula. Obviously, not, with the NBA, there's game set like 7-game series. You can look at more data sets, and it's so much more random in college basketball. There's got to be some sort of, I don't know. There's got to be some sort of magical recipe.
I really don't think that is. I think you just
Or
played
maybe
really
I'm
well
just
for
crazy.
six games.
Or maybe I'm just crazy and
What
still
cracked me up though
feeling
is
yesterday.
I forget who it was. I think it was some beat reporter from like Oklahoma City or something like that, Tulsa, that said, I'm so glad I get to cheer for consistency in the Final Four after Kentucky lost. Well, Gonzaga has like four transfers that is in their like first year at Gonzaga. Like, what's the difference between a one and done or a transfer? Like, it's not consistency. Like, you're still leaving a program. Like, Jordan Matthews is gone after this year.
I don't follow that there though.
I
I think
just,
again, it's different.
I
This
just,
is where I'm a little more black and white, and you're a little grayer.
yeah, for sure, for sure. I just think, to me, it's just, I hate the argument. I hate all those type of arguments where you just kind of. Where someone will stick something a certain time or a certain year and some obscure stat and say, well, this is a failure of the system.
This is the way it is. This is why
Right.
it happened.
Like I said, why should Big Ten or Pac-12 schools even play in the tournament if they haven't won in the one and done era? It's just you can sit there and just say something asinine like that and be like, well, they've never won, so there's my proof.
Yeah, see, again, I think the Big Ten has done well in the tournament as of recent, right?
Sure,
The
but they've
Michigan
never
team,
won.
my team, and then I know. And I don't and now I'm trying to figure out the recipe on the spot, but I can't think of anything other than it's one game.
That's exactly it. Like,
And
it's literally just play
now I'm
well
leaning
for
towards
six
you
games.
because that Wisconsin team and that Kentucky team were better than that Duke team, I think.
Yeah, I've always said this, and I've had a couple people agree with me where Kentucky's worst matchup was Wisconsin. Wisconsin's worst matchup was Duke. Duke's worst matchup was Kentucky. And it was just who drew who where that would have won the title.
Yeah, it is all about matchups.
Like, Kentucky would have, I think, obliterated that Duke team. I think they were a terrible matchup. But Wisconsin was the worst matchup for Kentucky, and it showed, just like Duke was the worst matchup for Wisconsin, and it showed. So it's just all matchups, man. Like there's really no recipe. That's why I say there's no recipe because
So like was Oregon Let's go back to Oregon UNC. Was that a good matchup or
I think that
just
was a good matchup for Oregon, and really for both teams because A, Duke has struggled with those kind of the stretch four, if you want to call it that. Like the Duke lineup with Tatum at the four that gave him fits. Notre Dame gave him fits.
talk about
Dylan Brooks just had
UNC?
a really bad game. Like
Dylan
that was a.
Brooks, they all shot terrible.
I mean,
I
they
mean,
shot terrible, but Dylan Brooks just played a dumb game.
even Ennis, like he was 2 for 9. Dorsey was 3 for 11.
Yep. And Dorsey's came all late. Like he didn't score for the first 16 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, no. And then who else was there? There was somebody who was. I think Dylan Ennis was 7 for 19, rather.
Yeah, I
So.
mean, Pritchard shot all right. Benson, I think, was like 1 for 1. But Ennis, Dorsey and Brooks especially. But Dorsey, like, or I'm sorry,
I was
Brooks
surprised they
just.
shot that bad and were in the game.
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing was they held Carolina to like 29% shooting until the last 2 minutes of the first half. So their defense played well. They gave up a ton of offensive rebounds, which was the advantage for Carolina. That's why I liked Oregon plus 5, and I thought Oregon was going to win the game. It's just Carolina kind of struggled with those, small ball lineups, so to speak, all year. Brooks just had a bad game. Like, he just had a dumb game. Like he had a lot of terrible turnovers.
Shout out to the preview episode.
Yeah.
Justin Jackson said he was going to be the difference. If he's the Justin Jackson that was the Justin Jackson yesterday, that Carolina team is just so different.
Yeah, I mean he hit anytime Carolina needed a big shot, Jackson hit it.
They had one crazy sequence where I don't know how the ball didn't touch the floor. It was perfect. They were up the floor in like 2.5 seconds, and he got a rhythm three off from the left wing, and I was just in awe.
I think it
Like,
was
that
if I
is why I love watching UNC. Like, that is the epitome of why I like watching them.
Yeah, I think the one that I will remember, which I tweeted out, was there's 13 minutes left, and Carolina was up four. Ennis had a breakaway, biffed the layup, and within 3 seconds, Jackson hit a three from the left corner, and I was like, that changed everything. You can say it came to 1 point game, but that swing of where you're about to cut it to two, you can set up your 1-2-2 press. And instead, you give up a rhythm three in the corner to go down seven. Like, I don't care if there's 13 minutes left. That was the play that swung the game.
Yeah.
And Jackson he did that all night. He had four threes, and every single one felt big.
That's what he does. He's one of those guys where it doesn't matter the situation, whether he's 0 for 7 or 1 for 8, like when he's streaky, he still hits that big shot.
Yeah, and credit to him. I
And
mean,
that floater.
his knock.
I got a crush on all the Carolina players being able to play in like a fluid system like that.
Yeah.
But his baseline floater is just so smooth.
He shot a
So
layup
ridiculous.
from 12 feet away. That one at the
Yeah,
end of the first half.
it's such a bad shot.
I mean, I love the floater.
But
I
it's
absolutely
like it's
love the
not because
floater.
he hits it every time. If I took that shot, I'd be 1 for 10.
See, I love. I mean, what's crazy is he's 6'8 shooting floaters. Like, you're used to seeing smaller guys who have to
Where's
get their shot up
he on the
over.
board now?
Right, like he's 6'8 and long, like his
Where's he on the
wingspan's long.
draft boards right now?
He's like 12, which feels right.
That feels right. I mean, he could definitely be
He's turning
great.
into a 3-and-D guy. Like his defense the last couple games have been unbelievable.
It'd be a good system. Maybe D'Antoni's system would be good for him.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he doesn't go to like the Knicks, the Kings,
The Nets.
the Nets, like he'll be fine. Yeah, I think, like 12 to 15 feels right for him. I mean, he's an older guy, he's a junior, so if you find him comparable to a freshman, I always lean towards the younger guy just because you get more time with him. But I mean, yeah, he's out of the Final Four or out of the tournament, Jackson, Collins, and I think Bell have made themselves the most money, and Thornwell. Those four guys have made themselves the most money.
Yeah, I saw Bell tweeted like that he was sorry and all that, and like he's gonna feel hurt about this for a while, but not
I
really.
wonder though, because he's like a borderline first round pick. A lot of people have him
No,
kind
yeah,
of.
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he'll feel bad when he goes back to Oregon.
Right.
Everyone's gonna be so happy they made it, and he's gonna be down about the box outs and all that. But if he gets drafted in the lottery, you quickly don't forget, but
Yeah, no, I
it's
thought
definitely
last
not
night
as
Jay
hard.
Billis put it perfectly afterwards. They were talking about this, and he said, when you get to the Final Four, it's just the loss is different because. You're so, you're an ac it's an accomplishment to get there, but then it's just over right away. And he said he brought up,
The slogan is literally "The road ends here." Like, couldn't
right.
be more abrupt.
The but he brought up when he was on Duke and they lost to Louisville by two, and he said, to this day, when this time comes around, it still hurts him. Like he still plays in his mind, what could have we done differently?
Did it hurt me yesterday? Like, it
Yeah,
sucked.
yeah. So I mean, hell, you can talk right away from there. So I think that's what kind of happened with Brooks,
Yeah,
though, or I'm
sucks.
sorry, with Bell going forward is, yeah, he might make millions of dollars, but there's still something to winning. I think the winning in college, it's just something, you hear Melo talk about it all the time. You hear guys like Anthony Davis talk about it. There's just something different about winning it.
I mean, you can't take it away from them
No.
either.
Now, the one thing that I do want to spend a couple minutes on. Mark Few won Coach of the Year, and he showed it last night with the smartest decision ever. Fouling up three.
Following up three debate.
What I like too is though, so there's 12 seconds left. He set up a press, so South Carolina had to waste time to even bring the ball up,
And I love that. I
which
love
is a
that stuff.
smart,
I'm a big advocate. when you're out of a timeout, when someone set up a play, just do something different for even for 15 seconds to throw off the rhythm. Come out in zone and go man for the last 15 seconds of possession. I just like switching it up because it really just messes with everything they do.
Carolina's been doing it for the last 40 years. Anytime after a timeout, they'll trap. They've been doing it since Dean Smith.
Yeah, but they know that's coming though.
Right, but it's just something different. They don't trap normally. So it's just something out of a timeout that they do. But again, it's just a different look because teams will forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for
following up three if you can just be so smart with it and execute, because it scares me.
Sure,
I guess
don't want to get caught in the shoot act of shooting. They did perfect.
Seen that. Have you seen that? Everyone talks about, oh, I don't want to get caught in the act of shooting, but have you seen someone?
I'm sure it's happened, but I can't off the top of my head, I can't remember.
But if it's happened, I feel like we would know because it would be such a big deal. This is why you don't follow three, right. Blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you what, though. I mean, I wasn't that Michigan game, that half-court shot. We had, like, five fouls to give, and we've never fouled like that.
Right.
What I would have liked to have done is we probably should have fouled before he attacked. We probably could have got some more time off. But I like playing it out. I like playing it out because that's just what I knew. I don't know.
I'm just one that's – I've shifted my mind entirely to the law of averages. And the law of averages say you're more likely to hit a three than make your first free throw, miss your second free throw, get a rebound, and make another basket. So it's a very analytical look at it, but that's the way I've now kind of developed. And the thing is, Gonzaga ran it perfect where they, like I said, they set up the press. So South Carolina didn't even start in the half court until like 8 seconds.
Clock went down a little bit too.
They made the pass to Thornwell, and he wasn't even close to shooting. Three and a half seconds left, and Perkins fouled. Like, that's exactly how you want to draw it up.
Still mad they didn't cover. That's unbelievable.
I can't believe they didn't cover. Shout out to Jordan Matthews for hitting more than three threes, though.
Yeah, did you have that prop?
Plus 130.
Nice.
I had that. I had PJ Dozier over 6.5 rebounds and assists, which was easy. I had the over in the game, which hit with like 6 minutes to go, which was an awesome feeling.
My unders were terrible. I hope no one listened to that.
Well, it depended what you got the number at for Oregon, Carolina. I didn't bet the over-under, but if I would have, the under would have hit.
What total did you have?
By the time I looked, right before tip, it got up to 155, but it was at 154 mostly.
Oh, yeah, I see.
So I had Oregon money line, which sucked, but I also had Jordan Bell over 25.5 points, rebounds, and assists for like plus 150. That was that hit, which was nice.
That block was ridiculous, though. Think he blocked Hicks?
Yeah. How about the bullshit call on the block that was it him or Ennis? I think the one that Ennis had that they called that cheap foul on Pritchard.
Oh yeah.
The
refs did a pretty good job in my opinion, though.
Yeah. My only complaint, it was in the first game. What was called, like, the first half to second half was just so different. And all, like, Gonzaga all of a sudden had 15 fouls, and South Carolina had like five. South Carolina fouls more than 331 other schools in the country. It just didn't make sense. Like, Gonzaga got called for a couple like bumps, and it's like Nigel Williams-Goss is getting bumped every time he comes off the high screen. But that's
but
to credit
it was
South
the flow
Carolina.
Of the...
That's how they play. And
yeah,
you make
that's
the, ref,
the flow of the game.
You make
exactly.
the ref make the call. My only complaint was there was just no consistency from the first half to the second half.
I thought John Higgins did a pretty good job.
I thought he missed so many calls. I mean, he missed the call where Karnowski got smacked in the face.
That wasn't a foul.
It was a foul. You
can't, no, it wasn't.
Even on the follow-through, you can't pop a guy in the face.
No, stop.
You can't. I mean, I'm not the only one that said that. I'm not the only one that said that. A lot of guys without any ties said that.
Like who? Give me some names.
It was all over Twitter last night.
They're probably schmucks.
They're very smart guys.
Unbelievable. That was not – no. If you get all ball, I don't care what you do. He was embarrassed. He can't leave the ground. I love him. but he can't leave the ground.
Hey, he got hammed on two guys. He left the ground just fine on that.
three bills going up.
Yeah, that's a big dude to get off the ground.
That's a lot.
I will say, though, it was overall the two games were officiated okay. The reviews were still ridiculous, but that's going to happen nonstop.
There's no way around that anymore.
Yeah, although arguably one of the three worst calls in the tournament happened. That offensive foul on Zach Collins to give him his fourth foul, where he just was post, like, took a dribble and they called
him. Oh, that was terrible.
That was one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
I just want to know what's running through some of these refs' heads.
Right. Like, I tweeted that out last night. Part of me wishes, not part of me, I do wish that refs would have to answer immediate questions, like coaches, like players. You know, if a player messes up, they have to answer to it. If a coach messes up, they have to answer to it. I just wish refs would have to answer questions.
It's part of the refs' transparency movement.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, they're not going to get shot in a press conference. Like, what's the harm in bringing them to reporters and getting asked, what did you see on that call, like you do with coaches or players?
Yeah, but how are they supposed to answer that?
Why did you make the call?
I completely missed it. I was premature with my whistle.
I'd be fine with that. At least give a reasoning saying, okay, he anticipated a call. He admitted he messed up. I would be 100% fine with that answer.
You say that now until it happens, though.
But at least we would know then. Like, right now, we're just speculating why he made that call.
And it would have to be that way, because I think people would get way more pissed if they knew why he called something that they didn't like.
See, I think the more casual fan would. The people that actually watch all year, I think, would appreciate it more. Like,
yeah,
I just don't see a reason why there's no ref interviews. Like, they have to – I just feel like they need to be held accountable to the game, like coaches and players. They're part of the game. Why not?
Yeah.
So that's just my – I mean, we interview committee members. Why can't we interview refs?
We're getting into the off-topic ref debate. We'll save that for another time. Let's get to
the real reason we're here, which is Gonzaga-UNC.
I'm excited. This is like an awesome matchup.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like it's like last year all over again, which is awesome. You know, Villanova was a 2 seed, a top 10 team all year. Kind of had the quote disrespect of previous NCAA tournaments, and caught fire during the run to get to the championship game, and everyone was still kind of doubting them. That's how I kind of feel. Everyone's looking at Gonzaga. Like, everyone's sitting there going, well, they haven't beaten a top 3 seed. Well, they only have 2 chances to really beat a top 3 seed.
If Roy's boys lose again, like, what's going through that fan base's head? Are they like, Roy can't coach? Or are they like, we should be happy that we've won championships, gone to back-to-back Final Fours now?
They've won two going with their head? They've won
two. No, I know that. Yeah. But, like, I'm saying, what's going through their head if they lose 2 title games in a row?
I mean, at least I think they can take a little bit. It depends how they lose. I think it depends how they lose. Like, last year, you can be mad that Bryce Johnson didn't step up on the trailer. I don't know if Roy necessarily got completely outcoached last year in the title game. I mean, Villanova played really well. This year, I think it all depends how they lose. Like, it would be a little heartbreaking, I think, to lose to Villanova and Gonzaga back-to-back years instead of, you know, Kentucky and Kansas, just because you hear the names and you go, how the hell did we lose to those two teams?
Yeah.
So, I still think this is one of the best coaching jobs.
How are they going to slow down Williams-Goss?
So, that's my biggest question. Williams-Goss is obviously the best player on Gonzaga. Now, obviously not NBA-wise, but he is the best player.
Mm-hmm.
I think you put Pinson on him to start. Barry can't guard Williams-Goss. You have to put Barry on probably Jordan Matthews or Perkins. I'd probably put him on Matthews because Matthews is just going to shoot. He's not going to really take you off the dribble as much, so Barry can kind of stick to him and let his ankles rest on that way.
Yeah, Pinson's long. He's athletic.
He's their best perimeter defender.
You got to toss him on him.
I mean, you might be able to put Jackson on him. You can give him different looks with Jackson and Pinson, but it should only be those two.
Yeah.
So I think
What does Nate Britt bring to this game?
Man, I'll give Nate Britt credit. Last night was the best game he's played
I agree. I'm just saying, what does he bring to this game?
Well, if he plays like he did last night, he at least brings another ball handler and a guy that can hit a couple shots.
I just wouldn't count.
No, I wouldn't count it either. Like, Nate Pritchard has not been good.
Maybe it's in his blood. And the two brothers are going to get the
God,
two
can you
titles.
imagine if he hits the game-winning three, the stories of him and Jenkins?
He won't be in.
What if Barry fouls out?
They still won't be in.
It would be him, though. They don't have, like, that's one sneaky little secret about Carolina is with Kenny Williams getting hurt, their guard depth isn't great.
No, it's not.
Like, you know, Seventh Woods plays like 2 minutes now. It's really Barry Britt.
Stillman!
My Stillman White, his 38-year-old ass would be hobbling out there.
Oh, that's awesome. I can't believe he got in that Kentucky game.
I can't believe he took Malik Monk off the dribble. Stillman White was MVP of that game. He threw two fouls on De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
But
I can't wait. So Karnowski and Meeks, that's going to be some big bodies.
Oh my God,
banging.
Dude, that's going to be. That's I'm really excited. That's the thing. You know, these front courts kind of balance each other out because Karnowski and Meeks are both your traditional back to the basket, just big
bruisers,
big mountains of men. Yeah, I'd love to see them. How many pizzas they could eat together? Like I said, my brother lives in Raleigh, and he was at a Carolina football game a couple of years back, and Kennedy Meeks strolled by on a scooter with four pizzas on his knees.
I believe it.
You know the two of them. Like
I
would love
it.
To see them just go to town and devour some food. But so those two, you know, those two are good matchups. And then you look at like a Tony Bradley and an Isaiah Hicks. Well, Jonathan Williams and Zach Collins kind of are that as well in the sense that, you know, they're your more kind of lankier, longer guys. Williams is more athletic. Hicks is obviously more athletic. Bradley's athletic. So, man, that front court's going to be incredible to watch.
Yeah. Whoever controls down low, do you think that's the difference? Or is it going to be three-point shooting?
I think it's going to be more the shooting. Because I mean, the best players are out on the wing or are in the backcourt. You know, it depends if
it depends on the game flow, honestly.
Yeah.
Do you see Gonzaga knowing that their best chance is to slow it down? And do we get kind of a slower pace, under pace? Or are they both flying up the floor? Because Mark Few was trying to get them to transition every single time they got the ball.
Well, I think that was also more against South Carolina's defense.
Well, no, I know, but that's what I'm saying is because UNC is so good in the open floor and playing fast, is Gonzaga going to try and slow it down?
I think Gonzaga will slow it down a little bit, but they'll still go out and run. Like, there will be free points if they get out and run just because Carolina's transition defense isn't great.
And they do rely on the transition three themselves a little bit.
Yeah, but they can also play through the post. Like, you'll still see the ball get dumped down to Karnowski and let him either make the move on Meeks because Meeks will foul. Like, he's been in foul trouble the last couple of games.
Mm-hmm. All year. It's kind of been a bugaboo for him.
Yeah, him and Hicks. So you'll see them, and they'll still slow down. And like I mentioned the blog I just posted today, Nigel Williams-Goss, they put him in the high ball screen more often than anything else. Like he runs it, I think, like 28% of the time this year, and he's really effective in it. He scores like a point per possession, a little over a point per possession. So I think you'll see like Karnowski come up and they'll put Kennedy Meeks in high ball screens.
That's smart. They should get him out there and trying to guard. If they get him extended out there, it's bad news.
Yeah, bring him extended and then let Williams-Goss drive. And the one thing that Williams-Goss does well is he kind of runs. He has that little runner, and it's not Dirk-esque, but he does keep his leg extended, you know, kind of a bent knee to keep a little separation between him and the defender.
Mm-hmm.
And he can shoot that out to the free throw line.
He hit some tough ones.
Yeah, he did.
Some of them are like, that was a bad shot, but they're good, obviously, because he's done it all year.
Yeah, I mean, he had 11 points in pick and roll sets yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is, if he gets 11 points in pick and roll set, I don't know how you lose unless you're giving up a lot of points.
So how does Gonzaga guard Justin Jackson then?
I think you see Gonzaga go zone. Because we saw them go zone a little bit. They do run like a 2-3 zone. I think you'll see them throw that a little bit. If they think they can rebound fine against Carolina out of
That
that
would
zone.
worry me. That would really worry
That's
me.
the concern. But I guess, you obviously start Mann. I think you start Williams-Goss on Berry. But Williams-Goss guarded Thornwell in late-game situations yesterday. So, if the game's close, I wouldn't be surprised to see Williams-Goss go on Jackson.
I can't believe that they would do that. He would shoot right over him.
He would, but he did it like they put him on Thornwell.
Yeah, Thornwell's not explosive like Jackson, though.
Yeah, but you're still. I mean, Williams-Goss is still a great defender, and he does have length. Like he's 6'3", but he does have longer arms.
And Justin Jackson's 6'8".
I know, but still, that's the thing is like there's not a great matchup for Jackson. Like you probably put Jordan Matthews will start on him.
Just because of length-wise, but I don't know, can he defend that well?
Matthews, I mean, he's not a bad defender by any means. That he started on Thornwell yesterday. Yeah, I think you're going to see him start on Matthews if I had to guess. I mean, he's.
So who do you got in this?
But the thing is, he's 6'4". Like Gonzaga runs three guys under 6'5" in the backcourt, and then they throw out Karnowski and Williams.
Yeah, it's not a terrible thing.
No, but it's just this is it's similar to like what Kentucky does, where they have three smalls and two bigs.
Two bigs.
That's
yeah.
where Jackson just has that mismatch. Like that's what Carolina thrives on.
Yeah, because there's really not many Justin Jacksons out there in the world.
No, you just want someone like 6'5", 6'6", that you can put on him. Nine.
So who do you like though?
I like Gonzaga.
Really?
Yep.
I'm so torn. I don't know. And that's a good thing. Because if I think it's going to be a good game.
I'm not saying it with like a great deal of confidence, but I think, I think Gonzaga makes sense here.
I think you can't go wrong with either one. I don't know. I like both teams. I like the way they both play. I'd like an exciting game. I want to see UNC do what they always do and make it fun to watch for me. I just want to see a really good game. I want to see last year all over again. Either one winning somehow at the end.
I think we'll see it. I mean, I don't think it'll be a blowout by any means.
-2 UNC.
Yeah, I think I like Gonzaga.
Are you doing Gonzaga money line?
Yeah, I'm taking Gonzaga money line.
I might do the same. For some reason, I'm feeling Gonzaga, like with the gut. The gut's telling me pick Gonzaga. And I go with my gut, and my gut usually lets me down. But I'm going to go with my gut.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Like, when watching those games, I think Gonzaga can kind of take advantage of Carolina's defense. The other thing to remember is Gonzaga's the best defensive team in the country.
Yeah, they are, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I can see Gonzaga slowing this game down.
Right, that's what I think too. Like I said, they'll get out and run when they can.
153. I'm going under. I'm hammering that under.
Man, both teams. I think both teams can shoot it well. It's a perfect number though. 153.
But that's still besides the point. I know they can shoot well. But the pace is going to be low because Gonzaga knows that if it gets to UNC's pace up and down, that favors them.
The problem, though, is Gonzaga is the 38th quickest team in the country.
I know that, but I'm saying they're going to have to play slower. What's UNC?
UNC is – so Gonzaga, their average possession length for Gonzaga is 15.8. seconds on offense and 18.2 seconds on defense. North Carolina is 15.4, which is 25th in the country on offense, and 17.7 on defense. So, I think you'll see Gonzaga get up and down on offense, and then on defense, you'll see them apply a little bit of like soft pressure just to try to waste some clock.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think you'll see it.
Yeah, I'm going with Gonzaga money line, and that's my final answer. Probably the under as well. I don't know. I'm torn. I'm making this decision way before I want to, but
I mean it's great that this is what happens. So when there's two teams in the country playing, the other thing is there's history. Teams that have lost the title game the year before and made it back are 3-4.
That's not that good.
No. The three wins.
I thought it'd be a winning record.
No, the three wins were Kentucky in 98, Duke in 91, and Carolina in 82. So, you know, 3-4. Teams that have made back-to-back championship games, though, are like 15 and 16 and 11, I think. Now, six of them came with UCLA.
In that the doesn't count. Era.
So it's just another weird stat that I just happened to look at this morning because I was curious. Like, hey, what happens if you make it back and you, after a year you lose it?
You're right. Now I'm completely lost. Like, there's no rhyme or reason with this freaking tournament.
No, there's not. That's how South Carolina ends up in the Final Four.
If they make it back, there's no way that they lose the next year because they've been there and all that. Nope. As soon as I think I have it figured out, nope.
Right. Like, that's how South Carolina ends up in the Final Four. There's no rhyme or reason. Like, South Carolina they were struggling down the stretch, and then all of a sudden they're phenomenal.
Well, shout out to Frank Martin.
Yeah, I mean, he did a hell of a job coaching these last five games.
And classy loser, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, his post-game press conference was heartbreaking. Listening to him talk, kind of break down and talk about, you know, not being able to coach Thornwell and Mackey again.
Yeah, that's why you love it. I mean, and I've really grown to like him a lot more than I heard people talk about him as a nice guy, even though he's crazy on the floor.
Yeah.
But I've really heard a lot of stories. Like, Dana Altman was on the radio even talking about him. There's just been a bunch of people who have said nothing but great things about him, and it's really shown throughout the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one thing. Everyone has kind of fallen in love with him.
Also, another quick shout-out to Coach Paris. Lamont Paris was the associate head coach under Guard. He was an assistant under Bo when I came in. He just took the Chattanooga job, I think.
Oh, did he really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, so pretty awesome for him. He lost his mom, like, right before the Final Four, and he's just, like, an awesome dude. So I will be a Chattanooga fan.
Speaking of coaching hires, Patrick Ewing has emerged as a serious candidate at Georgetown today.
Is like, that being tweeted right now or something?
It was this morning, late morning. I put a blog up on it. Rothstein had the story, had the first one that had the story. Do you like it? Do you not like him there? What's your take?
I don't know. I'm gonna call Frank Kaminsky because he's the head coach there with the Hornets, and he lives right below Frank.
Oh, really?
I don't know. They say he's got 5 cars. He doesn't say anything at practice. I just want to know a little bit more about him, if he can relate to, like, the college kids.
That's the thing.
It just seems odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because it's a John Thompson 2 guy. It's within the Georgetown family, and it's a name.
Why is that so?
I hate it.
Old money and all that.
It's
like the South.
That's my blog today. I said I would understand it. Ewing has spoke really well about in NBA coaching circles. He's got passed for a couple jobs that people thought he should have got from in the NBA standpoint. But the NBA game is so much different than the collegiate level game.
Yeah, and it's all he's known as the NBA.
Right. It's not like he's going to translate. And you know, somebody was like, "Well, you just surround him with assistants." Well, what's the chance he picks the right assistants, and what are the chances he picks someone that's not Georgetown guys that are assistants? To me, I just don't understand.
Don't think it makes sense.
No, like, for me, I think Jamin Christensen, who's at Mount St. Mary's, is going to be a star coaching. He worked under Shaka Smart at VCU. He's like 34 years old.
I'm sorry, I want to jump in here. Can we just talk about Tom Crean for a second?
What about him?
Why is everyone ruining Tom Crean for me? There's articles and radio interviews. Everyone's like loving the guy, and
yeah,
like, it's just ruining this image we all have of him.
I know. I mean, he is a great guy. Based on all the stories I've heard and now that I've read, he's a great guy.
He would talk shit to us on the floor.
Yeah, I think he's just a lunatic. Like, within the
like, we did not like him. And now everyone's painting him this bright picture, and now it's like disheartening.
Did he talk shit to you directly?
Yes.
What did he
Oh
say to
yeah.
you?
Him
What
and
did he say to you?
Gosser, or me and Gosser. He told Gosser when, well, I mean, which is kind of fair, but it's just kind of like, as a head coach, you just don't do it.
Right.
So I think Josh was guard. No, not that year. Who was he guarding? I forget who he was guarding. But he's like, take that slow white guy. It's like, are you kidding me,
Was he
dude?
yelling at like Jordy Holes to do it?
He did that to me when I was guarding Jordan Holes. Like, are you kidding me?
Jordy Holes is the definition of like short white guy.
Yeah, I'm short white guy. At least I had two dunks in my college career.
Could like Jordy Holes, I think, might be able to like touch the net.
Blow by him! Blow by him! I'm like, what? Stop. Stop.
I think he's just a lunatic within those 40 minutes.
Yeah, well, not really. Try 40 minutes and 30 seconds. Actually, 10 seconds, because that's how long it takes him to get through the handshake line.
But I thought he was good, like on ESPN as a commentator and everything like that. I
That's what
think
I'm
that's where you'll see.
saying. It's ruining him for
I
me.
know. I think you'll see him do that for at least a year or two, and then get back into coaching.
He's got to get a job somewhere. I mean, despite
He
how
would have been. I'll tell you what. He would have been a great fit at Georgetown if it wasn't
yeah.
for the Thompson
No,
name.
I saw you write
Yeah.
about that too, and I completely agreed there. But who would want to be the first coach after JT the third is
Yeah,
gone?
and it's not like you're replacing a legend. It's just the fact you have to deal with Thompson's.
Exactly. I don't know. I wonder where he'll land. I'm sure he'll do a good job wherever he goes. He's a good recruiter. I could see it happening.
So real
Just don't
quick, back to the title game.
know.
What do you think is the biggest advantage for each team in this game? What's the one thing if North Carolina does X, they win the game. If Gonzaga does Y, they win the game.
If Gonzaga stops Justin Jackson, they win the game. And if UNC, if Gonzaga stops Justin Jackson and keeps UNC off the offensive glass, those are I'll do two. I'll pick player and then strategy.
Okay.
I don't think Karnowski is a big X factor in this game. Let's see here. If they stop Williams Goss, I guess. I mean, that's the obvious choice. If they stop Williams Goss and then slow down Gonzaga from beyond the arc, those would be my two for each.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. To me, it's If Gonzaga can win the 3-point battle, they'll win the game, which means Jordan Matthews hit some threes and Nigel Williams-Goss hit some threes because the pass outs from the post will be there. So if they win the 3-point battle, they win the game. For Carolina, it is if Joel Berry is healthy and controls tempo, they win the game.
I like that one.
I think
So
that's
not even like go for 20. You're just saying if he can just play
he
well
just
and
yep because he
contribute
you
and
you
control
saw it
tempo.
in you saw it a little bit in the second half yesterday. He was pressing with his shots, and when he stopped pressing with his shots, he started driving and kicking, and it led to open looks. If he does that, I mean, he's always going to be a threat to score. Like people, no matter how healthy he is, people still think, well, he's still a good shooter. If he can just kind of dictate the tempo and not press, but look to get others involved and kind of turn into the quote more prototypical point guard. I think that's how you see Carolina win this game.
Okay.
I mean, he's their second best player.
I'm just I'm just excited.
Yeah,
I'm just
man,
it's
it's gonna
it's
be a,
it's a it's a great matchup.
it really is. It's gonna be a great game. I
I
have
hope
good
I
feeling
hope it
about the
lives
game.
up to the hype just for the sake of college basketball.
I will say the one thing this year, the big games have lived up to the hype. Like everyone wanted Kentucky, Carolina to live up to the hype. It lived up to the hype.
The big games have, for sure. And then
Wisconsin Villanova, that was one that kind of people penciled early. That lived up to the hype. Kentucky Wichita State lived up to the hype. The Final Four games lived up to the hype.
No, Kentucky Wichita State didn't live up to the hype. That was the worst game I've watched all year.
But it was a close game. Like that's all people care about.
No, it was. Yeah, you're right. But you know what I mean, though.
Right,
Like that
no,
was a
like it.
terrible
Well,
game.
it was Wichita State's tempo. If it was at Kentucky's tempo, it would have been a lot different. But it lived up. I'm saying live up to the hype in the sense of it's close the entire time. People are dialed in watching. Like, ratings have been through the roof this tournament.
I'm surprised that there wasn't a drop off after how lame the first couple days were.
The thing was, though, just because there were no buzzer beaters, there were no necessarily like late second plays, there were a lot of close games. Like
Yeah,
there
but
was a lot of games like
I get
seven.
it. But like the casual fan that
Right.
doesn't turn into the tournament
You had big names, though.
turn that turn that turns in just to see like the buzzer beater, like I'm surprised they didn't drop off.
Yeah, but think about the names you had advancing. You had, after, in the second, the first weekend, you had Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas,
UCLA.
UCLA, Duke,
No.
Wisconsin,
Yeah,
Villanova. You
that's
had all
right.
the big names playing, which is what people care about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what helps ratings.
True. I really thought the casual fan would have dropped off.
See, I think the opposite. If when there are upsets, the casual fan drops off. How many people want to tune in to like UAB, Florida Gulf Coast?
Nah, not many.
Right. That's like everyone
Only the
loves
people with money
upsets.
on it.
Right, everyone loves upsets, but no one wants to watch those two
Have
Cinderella
there been
stories again.
any buzzer beaters other than the Florida and
Luke May.
I guess Luke May?
No, I think those are the only two buzzer beaters.
You realize that there are two fans of both of those
Yeah.
teams sitting here.
Yeah. I think those are the
What
only
did
two
we
buzzer
do?
beaters.
Why us?
I know, right? We started the podcast, that's why.
Unbelievable. I'm still not over it. I'm still talking about it.
Yeah,
I want
there were no
Phoenix. I should
other.
have been in Phoenix.
Now there were some missed buzzer beaters, like Princeton missed a buzzer beater against Notre Dame.
What'd you think about that play?
The Princeton one, I
Yeah.
was fine with it. It was in rhythm. It wasn't like he dribbled around for 30 seconds and then.
Why settle?
It's their offense, though. Like they shoot threes. It's just what they do. Like to
It
me,
is what they do, but I
it's
just.
not necessarily settling if you're running your offense, and they were running their offense. Same with like Michigan. Like Michigan missed that three at the buzzer. That's what they do. Like they got it to Walton. He had a step in look. He just missed it.
I really like that team, the way they were playing. It was
Same here.
kind of sad they didn't make it.
Same here. But it
But
was it to me it, like settling is when you're in a 1-4 set and you have 20 seconds and you're shooting like the crossover step back and it's just, you don't run anything. Like Princeton ran something, Michigan ran something. So if it's a three, it's fine. How many people shoot threes these days? It's not like, I think the stigma of settling for a three is a little overrated.
it depends on the guy shooting it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It all as long as you're running your offense and that's the look you get. If you get a clean look, take it. I don't care where you are, take it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, I'm fine. Like, I hate the whole like, why did he settle for a jump shot when he can take it to the rack? Because maybe if he had enough space to get a better jump shot off, then if he would have tried to get to the lane and have 7 foot shot blockers waiting for him.
Right.
And I'm
That's
saying this for NBA, I'm saying this for college, I'm saying this like at any high level basketball, I'm okay with someone taking a jump shot. Even if you're down one, and if you take a three, that's fine. If it was the best shot available, like I'm okay with that.
Yep, that's exactly my thought. Like I said, if you're in rhythm, if you're within your offense, and you typically shoot, if that's what you shoot, if it's open, shoot it.
I was just saying it was a little deep for the Princeton guy, and I would have liked just a better shot. I'm not, like I said, I'm not against the three. I just thought they could have done better.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, it's a legit debate kind of some people had of was it a force, was it not a force? I understand it at least, but yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. Like, if they had that shot again, I wouldn't be upset if they took it.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted a couple more upsets. I'm a sucker for the buzzer beaters in those moments too.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. Give me the best teams. Like, I'd rather see 4-1 seeds in the Final Four than
That's not what
I'd rather see
I'm
all seven.
saying. I'm saying first weekend, like, because if you lose to a 12 seed on a buzzer beater, clearly, in my opinion, you're probably not one of the best teams.
Right,
Like,
yeah.
how many teams make it to the Final Four after just squeaking by one of their like first opponents?
Yeah, well,
Probably
Oregon
not
did.
many.
Oregon did.
Again, Rhode Island's a better team, though.
Right, but I'm
Like.
saying that's they're an 11 seed in the round of 32.
Okay, but you can't do that when you and I both know that they are not like they weren't like they wouldn't have been like a huge upset.
Carolina did against Arkansas.
Was that the first round game?
That was the second round.
I'm talking strictly first round.
Oh, first round? Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
I'm talking
first
like these
round.
first round games.
No, I mean, South Carolina blew out Marquette. Gonzaga blew out South Dakota State. Carolina blew out Texas Southern, and Oregon blew out Iona.
That's that like that right there, and I guess another study or whatever. If I
I'll tell you a team that Kentucky in 2011 had beat Princeton by 2 in the first round, and that was the year they beat Ohio State and Carolina to get to the Final Four. That I just remember that as one of the, probably the last times that it's been a really close first round game.
Yeah, so all I'm getting at is
UConn
it's
in 2014 beat St. Joe's in overtime.
But the teams that you're talking about are not like bad teams though.
No, I mean, UK was a 4-13 game, so you squeak by a 13 seed at the buzzer.
Yeah, but all I'm getting at is the majority of these Final Four teams are getting by their initial opponent pretty easily. So that's why first weekend, I just root for the buzzer-beating upsets because it's probably not a team that's going to, like, even if they make it to the next round or make it to the Sweet 16, they're probably not a Final Four team the majority of the time. That's why I'm a sucker for those buzzer-beaters, and I'm rooting for UNC Wilmington against Virginia because that's fun.
Yeah, well, Virginia's not fun.
I can't believe that
39 points.
Now Tony Bennett, on the other hand, now we talked about like Roy obviously winning championships. Where's Tony Bennett at? Like,
I think he's a great coach. I mean, I think
he's a great coach too.
I think
there's
he's
no doubt about
it. 15, 20 best. I'd say probably one of the 15 best coaches in the game right now. He's a collapse in the second half away from the Final Four last year, and people talking about him completely different. Because he has Final Four to his resume. That's what's so nice.
That was a collapse.
Right, but that's what's so cruel about this is if you don't have Final Four next to your name, or if you don't have a championship next to your name, or if you don't have two championships next to your name, it's like you're a bad coach because you lose one game.
Yeah, it's an unfair stigma in the NCAA basketball world.
Yep, but it can also make you seem like a great coach, like Shaka Smart. He made one Final Four, and, I mean, he was the most coveted coach in America.
Now he can barely win a game at Texas.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So, but people won't remember that. People will remember 2011 VCU, Shaka Smart.
Perfect example of this, John Gross.
Yeah.
John Gross was the most average coach, like, in the regular season.
Yeah.
I think he had, like, his overall record in the years he was at Ohio, he was, like,
he was slightly
above
500.
He had like a 55% winning percentage. But he goes to the Sweet 16, and now he's we got to have this guy. I never liked the hire from the beginning because of that.
I mean, you knew, like, I wish he would have went somewhere in between. Like, I think he's a decent coach because he's young. He worked under good coaches because he was at Butler. He was at Xavier. He was under Mata. But he just... like you said, he kind of struggled, which is, you know, his most wins. I mean, his last year at Ohio, he went 29-8 in the regular season, but he never won a MAC regular season title.
Mm-hmm.
He was good
in playoff time. Got hot at the right time, got a job, and kept Illinois mediocre for another 5 years.
He was 85-56 in the regular season at Ohio, and 34-30 in the MAC.
Yeah.
So 60% overall, 53% in conference play. Even at Illinois, he won 60% of his regular season games at Illinois. He won 41% Big Ten games.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, I mean, he made the tournament once.
And that was, I don't, those weren't his guys either.
No, it was his very first year he made it.
Yeah. I thought Bruce Weber actually did a decent job there.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Weber to me is just an average guy. Like, he's just there. Like, I don't, like, Kansas State, like, to him at Kansas State is perfect. They're just,
yeah, it is kind of perfect.
It's a program that's just kind of there, and he's just kind of
gonna keep them there and kind of decent, and
right, like, they'll never full out suck, but they'll never be competitive. No, I should say they'll never compete for a title. They're always competitive, they won't compete for a title.
Yeah.
So All right, well, that's it. Gonzaga, Carolina. That's how we end this regular. How we end this year in college basketball. It feels right. It feels right. I think we both agree on that.
Yeah, it does feel right. Sorry, I was taking a drink of water.
Yeah, I mean, it
still
feels
trying
right.
Still trying to get over yesterday.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So, to me, like I said, if you have two of the top 10, 15 teams in the country, it feels right. And we have two of the top five teams in the country.
Can't ask for anything more. You got two of the best defensive team, two of the best offensive teams.
Two All-Americans.
NBA talent, exactly. All-Americans. Good coaching. One really big fan base, and then one fan base that's probably going to have the heart of the rest of America.
Yeah, and you have, and the thing is, you have an easy storyline for both teams. It's Gonzaga being the mid-major that can win a title, and Carolina redemption from last year.
Gonzaga is like the they're kind of like Butler in that way.
Yeah, like they're trying to do what Butler couldn't. Like Butler couldn't beat the Blue Blood ACC team. Gonzaga's trying to beat the Blue Blood ACC team.
Or the UConn team, right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking the year where, like, that 2011 Final Four was just so shitty. But I was thinking the 2010 Final Four where it came down to the last second, and it kind of feels like this game's going to go that way too.
Yeah, when Matt Howard drilled the guy on the screen.
Oh, my God. He murdered him.
Murdered all right, yeah.
That he murdered.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think that person cares either because they got the championship.
No, not at all.
I would have been holding breath, though.
Brian Zubek still thrilled about it.
Zubek.
So, all right, that's it for the show. We hope we get you ready for the title game. We both like Gonzaga Moneyline, but we both don't love it. So it's exactly how I think America feels. There's a lot of questions about this game. Who wins some of the individual battles? We kind of gave that out. Make sure you follow us at FundamentallySD on Twitter. Follow both of us on our own personal Twitter accounts, Ben Brust, Barstool Reegs. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can follow us on SoundCloud. But really, iTunes is what drives a lot of stuff. If you do subscribe on iTunes and you rate and review us and leave your Twitter handle, you will be entered to win a prize. We'll be giving out a couple prizes throughout the entire year, calendar year. So, you know, keep trying to do that. Like I said, it helps us.
Yeah, you know, we got some guests coming. Coaches, maybe some writers, maybe some former players. So that's going to be picking up soon. So all is well in the fundamentally sound world.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, like I said, subscribing on iTunes and everything, that it helps us show these guests who we are, and like I said, it helps us get sponsors, and sponsors lead to more and better shows and better guests. So if you're a sponsor, a potential sponsor listening, reach out to us. Like I said, we're both more than willing to be bought for a very, very cheap price. We are that easy to convince. But again, follow the show, subscribe. I can't stress enough. Thanks to everyone who has listened. We've had a good start. That is episode 4 of Fundamental.